Welcome, everyone, to another episode of the NBA Podcast. We are now a little over 3 weeks into the 2016-17 season. The contenders are starting to separate from the pretenders, and we will be talking about a lot of that today. Before we get underway, be sure to check us out on iTunes. You can download, subscribe, leave some reviews. We'd love to hear your feedback. You can find us on Twitter at the NBA Pod. In our bio, you'll find all three of our Twitter handles as well, so check us out there. And be sure to give our new site, FanRag Sports, which is what today's Fast Break has been rebranded to, give them a follow as well on Twitter, at FanRag Sports and at FanRag NBA for just the NBA section. With all of that said, today I am joined, as always, by Morten Jensen and Sarah Chalea. How's it going, guys?
It's going well, Brian.
Going all right.
That's good to hear. Both of your teams are off big wins, and so are my Sixers, actually. So it's a good day in the NBA podcast universe. So we're going to get started here with Drew Holiday, who is set to make his season debut on Friday. He was sidelined throughout the preseason and the first few weeks of the regular season to take care of his wife, who underwent surgery on a brain tumor in October. And he also, his wife, and he had a child a few weeks before that, so he was taking care of his wife and his newborn. So, I mean, first of all, we're just thrilled that he's coming back at all. It's, you know, it's great news for the holidays. So we're just happy to have him back in the NBA, aside from being able to watch him play. Just very happy that he and his family are doing well. That said, it's now time to focus on the on-court ramifications of his return. Without him, the Pelicans have struggled pretty badly, and they are toward the bottom of the Western Conference. So, Sarah, do you think Drew Holiday is going to help the Pelicans turn their season around?
I think Drew Holiday is going to help the Pelicans. I don't think that they're really going to turn their season around, no. He definitely can't hurt. I mean...
Right,
he's going to help. Hopefully, guys like Solomon Hill, who at the beginning of the season I went out on a limb and said he would justify the money that he's getting. So far, hasn't quite fanned out, but a lot of season left. But you know, guy like him, Etuan Moore, who all three of us like, I think Drew can only help those guys. Hopefully, help take pressure off of AD. But I just. They're just not a very good team regardless. Like, they're still going to be around the bottom of the Western Conference, unfortunately, is the way I see it. So certainly thrilled to have him back. And hopefully he can make me eat my words. That'd be great. But I don't see it turning around, really. No.
That's fair. Mort, are you any more optimistic than Sarah is?
Nope. No, sorry, okay. I'm not. Look, I love the fact that Drew Holiday is coming back. I think this is a good sign, not just for him, but his wife and the entire thing going on at home. And for the Pelicans, obviously, as well, I think they will see a improved effort every night. Mm-hmm. But I believe I mentioned before that we have to acknowledge he's been injured a lot.
Yes.
So he has to come back and learn everything and make sure that... You know, he's incorporated fully. Sarah mentioned Solomon Hill as a guy that we were hoping to have live up to his contract. I was pretty down on Solomon Hill, and you guys actually talked me into supporting the guy. And well, that sounded horrible. I do support him. I support every NBA player, but not be down on his production. And so far, unfortunately, my concerns were valid because... Ouch, 31% from the field. And what did he sign for? $52 million?
Yeah, something around there.
I mean, I don't even care if that was under the new cap. That's just too much. And yeah, I mean, you have to look at that roster and the way they distribute their financials, and you have to assume that they're actually in a pretty tough spot. Like, how are they going to upgrade? You know, Buddy Hield hasn't looked like we thought he would. Obviously, there's a lot of time left, and he's bound to get better, but it doesn't really look all that positive as of right now. And Tyreke Evans is not a guy I have any confidence in whatsoever. especially in this league and era where everything is about spacing and movement. So no, Brian, to answer your question, I am not more optimistic than Sarah at all. I'm probably a little bit more pessimistic, actually.
Good. Okay, well, Pelicans fans, I'm going to help you out. I'm going to take the optimistic angle here. I wrote a thing for a B-ball breakdown recently about Drew coming back and what effect he'll have. I mean, the obvious one is that he's just going to push the Pelicans' point guard rotation back a spot. So right now, Tim Frazier has been starting and playing well for them. But after that, it goes downhill very quickly. You know, Lance Stevenson got hurt and they ended up waiving him. So they've really been relying on the likes of Archie Goodwin and Langston Galloway as their main backup ball handlers for the last couple games. And that has not been going well. So the fact Holiday, I mean, Alvin Gentry, their head coach, did say he's not going to throw Holiday out there for 35 minutes on Friday. He's going to ease him back in a little bit. But, you know, just having the option of having either Holiday or Frazier on the court for all 48 minutes should help at least somewhat. That said, their defense has still been very bad. Holiday is a great defender, but I don't think he alone will single-handedly fix that. You know, they're only 4.5 games out of a playoff spot right now, so it's too early to bury them completely. But that said, a similar thing happened last year where they fell into a huge hole, and then they kept trying to dig out of it, and they, you know, they get to close to 500, and they lose a couple games, and they could never just quite get over that hill. So unless they have a huge winning streak once Holiday returns, you know, it's going to be hard to be optimistic about their playoff chances. That said, I do not think they are the worst team in the West once he comes back. And Morton, you mentioned Tyreek Evans. He started practicing as well on Tuesday. He's had 3 knee surgeries since last February. So again, you can't be super optimistic about him hitting the ground running. You got to figure, you know, Holiday, he's been out, but it's not like it's been an injury. He's just been, you know, caring for his wife. So it'll take him a couple games to get back up to speed just because he hasn't played basketball in a few months. But it's not like they're going to have to ramp him up slowly. In theory, he should be able to regain his old form pretty quickly, whereas Evans, I think, will take a little bit more time. That said, you're just, you know, adding 2 of, in theory, your best 4 or 5 players back into your lineup. It's going to help. It's not going to hurt, that's for sure. So I think there's reason for optimism in New Orleans. I'm not writing them off completely, definitely not as the worst team in the West, which record-wise they are right now. That said, you know, the West is already shaping up to be really good, and there have been a couple surprising teams out West. So it's going to be tough for them to get back in the playoffs, especially, you know, Anthony Davis missed Wednesday's game. I think it was a right quad contusion, I want to say, something like that, which is just a bruise. It's not a huge deal, but it just kind of understates the fragility of Anthony Davis. You know, he's never played more than 70 games in a season. You can't bank on it happening now. So, you know, there is reason for optimism in New Orleans with Drew and Tyreek coming back, but if Davis goes down, their season does as well. Speaking of, you know, I mentioned there are some surprising teams out West. I think the biggest surprise so far are the Los Angeles Lakers, who are 7-5 on this young season. In terms of the Westgate Superbook in Las Vegas prior to the season gave them the second worst over-under in the league, ahead of only Phoenix. Brooklyn, I believe, sorry. You know, they were behind the Philadelphia 76ers, who won 10 games last year. I think their over-under was like 24.5. So they're already almost a third of the way to that at 7-5. Mort, what do you think, who deserves the most credit for this big turnaround from LA?
Well, the obvious answer is Luke Walton, but I want to dig into the players beforehand. Julius Randle is so much better this year than he was last year. I had major concerns about his efficiency last year. He had a true shooting percentage of, I think, 48 last year. It's above 60 now. Obviously, small sample size alert. But it does seem like some of it is sustainable. He's hitting better from the line. He's taking smarter shots. It seems like Luke is drawing up some plays for him. That's really getting him going. And also, he's got a nice bounce. to him that he didn't display last year, probably coming off the broken leg and whatnot. But yeah, I mean, I'm really digging what Julius Randle is doing right now. And obviously the quarterback in D'Angelo Russell, he's doing wonderfully as well. You know, not having Kobe in front of him has just unlocked him entirely. And I mean, I think we all knew last year was just a waiting game. It was the whole goodbye thing, and it suspended their development curve a year. And now we're seeing what the Lakers have been waiting for, and the result, at least so far, has been so much better than anyone anticipated. And, you know, good for the Lakers.
Yeah.
But to answer your question, Luke Walton. Walton.
I dig that. I think I was going to shout out Julius if you didn't. You know, I before the season started, I forget where, I think it was the from the Orange County Register, Draymond Green spoke with them and said that Julius Randle can be a better version of Draymond Green, which I was like, what? What are you? Are you crazy? Because, you know, as you said, more the last season, he scored decently. He rebounded well, but that was it. Like, we didn't see any sort of this facilitating that he's been doing this year. He wasn't really racking up like steals and blocks. He didn't really assert himself as a defensive presence. So it seemed like he was kind of in the mold of a Kenneth Faried. Whereas now you're like, oh wow, he really is kind of more of a Draymond Green. Like, he is kind of this do-it-all glue guy. And when you're pairing him with two electric scorers like D'Angelo Russell and Brandon Ingram, you know, the latter hasn't really gotten off. You know, he's not scoring like Kevin Durant did as a rookie, but that's partially by design. But, you know, those guys are going to put up 20, 25 points a game for, you know, for the next 10 years.
Yeah.
So he really, I never really considered him as part of their long-term core before this year, but now it looks like he really is, you know, a long-term piece to keep in mind with that Russell and Ingram and Jordan Clarkson. Sarah, has anyone caught your eye out in LA?
Yeah, I mean, you guys nailed it with Julius Randle. He looks great, and a lot of us had reservations going into the year and thought maybe Larry Nance would take his starting spot, and that's kind of all out the window because the bench is great and Randle looks great. But yeah, I don't even really want to give one guy most credit because it really has been such a great team effort. D'Angelo looks good. Nick Young is defending. It's like, what is happening? And yeah, Luke obviously deserves a lot of credit for that because, you know, there's so much that happens just when you kind of have a coach who gets out of your way and then also can help put you in positions to succeed. That's huge. So, yeah, it's been a full team effort. Their bench is one of the best in the league, is it not? So, and we thought that it had the potential to be really good coming into the year. So, they've more than lived up to that. So, yeah, it's been a full team effort.
Yeah, Lou Williams also has been playing well off the bench, to speak to your bench point. I mean, when I saw that Vegas over-under, I said it in our division preview that it seemed pretty low to me. You know, I just thought the infusion of Deng and Mozgov, we made fun of Mozgov's contract, but he's still, you know, he's a good player. He's fine. If you were paying him half as much, we wouldn't bat an eye at that contract. You know, it would just help a lot. And you guys both said it. I think without Kobe, this is just a totally different team. Like, there was just bad juju in that locker room last year with Byron Scott basically, you know, holding D'Angelo accountable and benching him for one bad shot. And then Kobe is taking these like 28 foot fadeaways with 18 seconds left on the shot clock. He's like, yeah, you're fine, Kobe. Just you do you. It's your last season. So it definitely seems like the young guys are taking to Luke Walton well. You know, and it kind of speaks to Miami. You know, there's always this talk of like, well, shouldn't they have tried to keep Dwayne Wade? And I think these Lakers go to show, like, there is value in moving on from your aging stars if they're not willing to take a smaller role, which, you know, as we're seeing Wade and the Bulls, he does not think he's at that point in his career yet, and he's clearly not. You know, unless you're willing to do a Tim Duncan or a Dirk Nowitzki and, like, willingly take a backseat to some of your younger guys, there is value in moving on. So the Lakers did not do that last year. They got Brandon Ingram out of it, but good on the Lakers now for, you know, giving their fans reason for hope. And as a Sixers fan who, you know, the Sixers own their top three protected first round pick, I'm ecstatic to see them good. I think at some point, yeah. I think regression's going to hit them pretty hard, but I don't, you know, I am no longer worried about them being one of the three worst teams in the league. So if their first round pick ends up in the like 8 to 10 range and you got that for Michael Carter Williams, you know, just another feather in Sam Hinkie's cap. So very, very happy for the Lakers, for both selfish and selfless reasons.
A second, Brian.
Yes.
Luol Deng. You mentioned Luol Deng.
Mm-hmm.
Like, they're doing this despite of Luol Deng's struggles. Like, we have to touch on this. 31% from the field after 12 games. He's averaging just 6.4 points a night and playing a half. Like, okay, when he was awarded 72 million?
Mm-hmm.
We all thought he was going to play at least 30. And he was going to be this probably 15-8 guy playing a lot of small ball for. He's not looked good offensively. Defensively, he brought the effort. He's still active on the glass, and he's functioning as a mentor, which is great. And you're partly paying him loads of money to do that as well. But the fact that his game has now regressed, it certainly looks that way. What the hell do you do, like, after this year? And if it keeps going worse, if it's going to get worse for him, offensively speaking, that's hell of a lot of money to have on that cap just for him.
I think you pray for an amnesty. That sounds like it's not going to happen in the new CBA. But, you know, otherwise, we made fun of Mozgov's contract relentlessly, but the length of Deng's deal did give us pause back when that happened because, you know, he's 31 or so, right? But, you know, he played for Thibodeau, so he's really 40 in a 30-year-old body.
Oh, yeah, of course you had to go there.
Of course. I mean, he played like, you know, upwards of 38, 40 minutes a night for a couple seasons, and that's going to wear on you. So hopefully, you know, last year in Miami, he I don't want to say he struggled, but he was not the star that he was at the end of last year. Yeah. So maybe, you know, long term, they're going to put Brandon Ingram as their starting three at some point. So maybe you move Deng to the bench and you put him in that backup power forward role, which is what he thrived in Miami. But for now, I think you just got to roll with the punches until Ingram's ready to start. And, you know, Luke Walton has been very resolute about saying, look, this kid, you know, he weighs like 200 pounds soaking wet. He just can't take the pounding of an 82-game season right away. We just got to ease him in. And I think at some point this season he will supplant Deng as the starting three. But for now, especially with things going well, you know, if you're 7-5, even despite that, hope Deng can snap out of this funk. And if he can't, then whenever Ingram's ready, switch him and hope Deng can get some rhythm off the bench.
Yeah, it'd be necessary. Hey, oh, and final credit to Luke Walton. No one is playing more than 28 minutes a game.
Damn.
No one.
That's crazy.
That is wonderful, really.
Yeah. That's really smart, especially for given the depth they have. You know, why not take advantage of it? It's good on him for, you know, Byron went a very veteran heavy approach last year. So it's good that Luke is getting his kids minutes and getting them important minutes, but also still relying on the vets that he has rather than just going into a full on Hinkie-esque tank rebuild. So, you know, the Lakers are definitely one team that have exceeded early expectations. I think the other big one, the Brooklyn Nets, they're 4-7, sure, but most people expected them to be the worst team in the league by far. Yeah. And they, you know, they're not that. They put up a fight against the Lakers the other night. They're just frisky. So, you know, I've been very high on the Nets ever since they hired Sean Marks, who came from the San Antonio tree, and Kenny Atkinson, who was Jeremy Lin's former assistant coach in New York. And we should mention, they're 4-7, even though Lin strained a hamstring close to 2 weeks ago and hasn't played for a decent chunk of the season. So, yeah. Sarah, who has caught your eye in Brooklyn?
I will be honest, I have not seen a single Nets game yet. So, for me to try to explain what's going on in Brooklyn would just be me making stuff up.
That's but fair.
I will say that I was looking at their pace. They're second in the league. So, I'm guessing that's a big part of their MO is pushing in the ball. So, you tell me who's pushing it the most and how are they making it work.
Mort, do you want to take that one?
Well, they're getting a lot of three-point shots. Mm. So, and it's quick shots. Like, they're averaging almost 35 attempts from behind the arc, which is third in the league. Not hitting it particularly well right. But that's how it is. But they're trying to establish themselves as a running team. You know, Sean Kilpatrick, who was decent last year after getting there, has really built on his success this year, averaging almost 15 in, I think, 25 or 26 minutes a night. So you have some firepower coming off the bench. You have Brook Lopez, who started jacking up threes like he's Steph Curry. Not making them at the same rate, but, you know, they're just... Brian said it. I mean, they are... What was the word you used? Splunky, spurgy, whatever. You know, frisky, yeah. Whatever. They're just... They're young, they're athletic, they like to move, and... Gosh darn it, they're actually entertaining, which has been, like, I put them at my lowest league pass rank for the past few years. They proved the hell out of me wrong. I mean, they proved me wrong, so, you know, I would probably put them in the top 8. Is that fair? Yeah.
Oh, wow.
Yeah. Look, they might be losing, but they're fun.
Yeah.
They are, and they're trying because they know they're not going to get a draft pick anyway.
Right.
So, yeah. You know, they're going for the W's.
Yeah, they have like a 2014-15 Sixers vibe to them before the Okafor just rained a cloud of darkness upon the team for over a year. But yeah, they're like fun bad instead of depressing bad, which is how I would describe the 2015-16 76ers. Also, I mean, Trevor Booker has been playing out of his freaking mind. And, you know, I liked what the Nets did conceptually this summer. You know, they did not, while the Knicks went out and got all these big names, they got Derrick Rose and Joakim Noah and Courtney Lee and Brandon Jennings. The Nets were like, no, we're going to go for these fringe guys. We're going to go for guys who are not going to, like, have splashy headlines. We're going to get the Justin Hamiltons and the Trevor Bookers. And Jeremy Lin, you know, he has his insane Twitter army that will come attack you anytime you don't call him the best point guard in the league. I'm sure anytime a Jeremy Lin fan hears this podcast, my mentions will just die. But they really tried to build a young team because they knew they didn't have the draft capital that most rebuilding teams do. You know, they have the pick swap with Boston this year, and their 2018 first rounder is going to Boston unprotected next year. So, Morton, as you said, they have no incentive to tank because they're only going to send a better pick to Boston.
Yeah.
So I really just liked conceptually what they did this summer, and I'm glad it is panning out for them. You know, even before Lin went down, it really seemed like he and Atkinson are just a perfect fit. And I think Howard Beck of Bleacher Report had a story about what made them work so well together, and it's just clearly like Atkinson knows what Lin's strengths and weaknesses are. He knows he's a pick and roll point guard, and he's not going to shoehorn him into an offensive system that doesn't take advantage of those skills. He's going to run a lot of pick and roll and let Lin do what he does best and then kind of mix it up from there. But you know, you mentioned Brook Lopez. I think he had 11 3-point attempts the other night. Like,
yep, he did.
Yeah, Atkinson is letting these guys kind of test their range a little bit and test, you know, go outside the box, which I like. So
not one net, Brian, not one net has resisted taking a three. The lowest 3-point attempt on the year for any player is three. So every player on the roster has attempted at least three 3-pointers this year in 11 awesome. Games. And if you look at their per game numbers, only Chris McCullough is under one attempt a game. And he's at 0.8. And he's doing that in just 7.3 minutes. So if you adjust for regular minutes, he's also shooting that ball. So basically, the Nets have created a 15-man roster who all are capable and willing to shoot the three-pointer. That is next level analytic shit we're dealing with here. I love it.
Yeah, they just won up to Morey Ball. So, I'm happy for Nets fans. I'm especially happy because those Nets picks that are going to Boston look worse by the day. So, for all that we've railed on Danny Ainge for his inactivity on the trade market, those are depreciating assets even more so than before. So, you know, it's time to make a move, Boston, because that Brooklyn 2018 first rounder isn't looking like a surefire top three pick anymore.
Could have had Jimmy.
Could have had Jimmy. But let's transition to another swingman who is not faring as well as Jimmy Butler these days. Evan Turner.
Surprise.
Evan Turner. So, through 286 minutes this season, he has been a minus 111, according to Matt Moore of CBS Sports. Moore tweeted this the other night, according to an unnamed media source, that is almost twice as bad as any other player on a team that is 500 or better. So let's just let that sink in, this four-year, $70 million player.
Well, no one saw that coming.
Yeah. So, Moore, do you think there's anything... What could the Blazers do to help him turn this around, if anything?
God, that's a difficult question because obviously you can get him going in some capacity, but it means giving up superior options. Mm-hmm. Like if he's a guy who needs the ball. Right. Everyone knew this, and what's the alternative? Taking the ball out of the hands of Dame and CJ? Like why would you do that? It makes no sense. And even if you have him coming off the bench, you would take the ball out of the hands of Alan Crabb, who's a significantly better player. I mean, this was just such a bad signing, and everyone saw it. And this is what perplexes me about the NBA. They are all so intelligent, the people behind the scenes, but there are times when deals are so blatantly silly, and everyone can see it, and yet it still gets done, and people are like, these are professionals we're dealing with. Of course, this is going to work out. And look, I have great respect for the Portland Trailblazers organization. They've done it so well over the past few years. The way they got over LaMarcus leaving for San Antonio, I mean, inspiring, honestly. Downright inspiring. And then they just messed it up with that signing.
Yeah.
And that's why the last time I mentioned Alan Crabb and his struggles, that now I'm concerned. That's why I'm concerned. Now you have two guys... both combining for 145 million who are not contributing.
Yeah.
Not what you needed, Portland. Not what you needed. And yeah, you could get Evan Turner going, but for what reason and at what cost? This was just ridiculous.
Yeah. And at this point, you're not going to find a taker for him. You're not going to be able to trade him for anything of value. You're going to have to attach something. That's true. Well, but even the Knicks, I think, at this point, would make Portland attach something of value or, take back a really bad contract, which they don't actually have on the books right now because Derek is going to be a free agent after this year anyway.
Well, Joakim.
Oh, that's true. Oh, yeah, there you go. That could just be...
Wait, that's not a bad swap, is it?
Oh, well, depends who you ask. I think for both fans of both teams, they would say yes. But, yeah, that would... definitely take care. Just really trade their problems, respectively.
Yeah.
But yeah, I'm equally as pessimistic as you. I don't think he's gonna be a league worst plus minus.
No.
But I also don't think he's going to become the player that he was in Boston. I think that ship has sailed, and they're, you know, the logic behind acquiring him was they just wanted an extra ball handler aside from Dame and CJ, but Allen Crabbe could have turned into that guy in theory. And,
like, easily yeah. even.
Yeah. It God. Seemed like it was a contingency signing. Maybe they weren't sure what was going to happen with Crabbe, and then once they saw, and once they were like, oh yeah, we can match that, they're like, oh crap, we shouldn't have signed Devin Turner. Yeah. Okay. So, sorry, Portland fans, but hey, at least you guys, despite Turner's struggles, at least you guys are still in the playoffs as of now. I want to move to Sean Devaney of Sporting News, who reported a couple days ago that this time the DeMarcus Cousins trade rumors might actually be legitimate. You know, we've heard these for years at this point, and Kings fans are, anytime you mention Boogie getting traded, they get very angry and defensive, as they should, because to date nothing has happened, and Vivek has pushed away those rumors every chance he gets. But they're saying, you know, the Kings are 4-8 now, and I just want to read out their upcoming schedule to give you a sense of where they could be, you know, come, hell, even the start of December. So on Friday, they have the Clippers, then the Raptors, the Thunder, the Rockets, the Nets, the Wizards, the Sixers. So the end of the month, they've got a couple cupcakes in theory, but they're the Clippers, so... they're the Kings, so nothing is a cupcake for them. But, I mean, feasibly, they could be 4-12 heading into that Brooklyn game. And we just talked about Brooklyn actually being kind of frisky. So, you know, they could be staring at a huge deficit by the end of the month in terms of the playoff race. So, Sarah, do you think it is time to pull the trigger on a DeMarcus Cousins trade?
Yeah, because I really don't think you're going to get him back. So... why not see what you can get for him? Though at the same time, he's playing well and he seems to be getting along with his coach at the moment, so it's a tough call always to get rid of a guy that talented. But yeah, I mean, it's probably time to move on from him and Rudy Gay, because Gay said that he doesn't, you know, well, he seems like he doesn't want to be there. He's not talking about sticking around anyway. So yeah, probably. But I'm trying to think of where I'd like to see him go. And there's not, like, teams who need bigs. The Mavericks could use a youngish big, but I don't know what would be enticing there for the Kings. I don't know, I'm interested to hear what you guys come up with, because you guys are always more creative than me in the trade scenarios. So
come on, Sarah, admit it. You would rather have DeMarcus than Powell. I mean...
Powell kicked butt in Sacramento last night. I was quite proud of Powell, actually.
Yeah, he did.
Yeah,
but he does that on occasion.
Yeah, on occasion.
Yeah, on occasion.
I don't know. I guess because Pop could probably... you know, they'd probably get along. Mm-hmm. But I'm always a little wary of guys who have so many hiccups like that, you know? So
organizational hiccups, though.
Yeah, yeah. That's true. He is incredibly talented. I mean, it's crazy to watch him play. So, I don't know. Well, who else? So you think Spurs? Spurs is a good fit.
I would love him in San Antonio. Absolutely love him. He would finally have a coach who knew what to do with him, and he would instantly listen to Pop. Like, could you imagine a trio of some sort if it was all, you know, at all possible, Kawhi, LaMarcus, and DeMarcus?
That would be unfair. But what do the Spurs have that could entice Sacramento is the question.
Well, you know, Magic Beans.
Yeah, right. Danny Green off of LASIK.
Yeah. I mean, look, you're dealing with a guy who didn't even know the salary cap. I'm not really concerned.
That's a fair point. I'm shocked that you didn't say, aren't you the one hammering the Boogie to Denver train?
Yeah, yeah. No, it makes total sense. I mean, I think he would make so much sense for Denver, given that Mike Malone is there. You have like a plethora of shooting guards, young shooting guards on rookie deals that you could send the other way. So value is there to be found. DeMarcus getting big minutes at sea at Denver would mean that Nikola Jokic probably goes the other way.
Mm-hmm.
That would be a shame because he's really terrific, but it's a sacrifice I probably would be willing to take.
Yeah.
But I would absolutely hate a starting lineup consisting of Bookie and Kenneth Reed alongside one another.
Mm-hmm.
Like, then you would have to put Wilson Chandler at some sort of small ball four role, or even Gallo or something like that. But Denver is logical for many reasons, as is Boston.
Yes.
So, yeah, I mean, there are quite a few teams out there that make sense. Theoretically, like the Bulls as well, but they just don't have the pieces.
Yeah.
And Philly, I don't assume would want to to get a guy like that when you have Joel Embiid.
Yeah.
So yeah, you would probably be looking more at a point guard.
Right.
And I'm thinking Boogie's teammate from Kentucky would make a lot of sense for you guys. I've been mentioning that before.
Mr. John Wall. Yeah. Watching him in that Sixers game last night, it was just like, John, I feel so bad for you. You're losing to the Sixers. Maybe you should join forces with us. We'll give Nerlens and Okafor and our first-round pick for you. Just come to Philly. I mean, I think Denver and Boston are the two obvious landing spots just based on need. Denver doesn't need another big man because they have Jokic and Jusuf Nurkic. But that said, you can always package one or both in the trade to get Boogie, because Lord knows the Kings don't have enough centers as is. And Boston, you know, obvious fit next to Al Horford. So if those trade rumors do heat up over the coming months, those are definitely two of the teams to watch. Mort, I think you nailed it. Philly has the assets, but they've got 16 centers already. They don't need another one.
Off-ball idea, goofball idea, maybe.
Mm-hmm.
So Buddy Hield, Etuan Moore, and an unprotected first from New Orleans.
I don't think that would be enough.
No, probably not. Then you can throw in another unprotected pick if need be. But I would sure as heck love to see AD and Cousins just in the same front court.
That would be super fun. Yeah. A lot of the places that he fits, the teams just don't have the assets, unfortunately. But it would be like, oh god, seeing him.
Both could shoot now. Yeah. Both are shooting threes, so it's not going to be like they're clogging up the lane for one another.
Right.
Both can pass.
Right. Yeah, that would be super fun. So let's keep an eye out for Boogie trade rumors over the coming weeks. I did see Zach Lowe had a column today on the OKC Thunder, and he mentioned that they have been going back and forth on trading for Rudy Gay as well. So that's another name. Sarah mentioned him earlier as someone to keep an eye on, because he is a free agent after this year, and he has said he has no plan on sticking around in Sacramento. So they would be crazy not to trade him, especially, you know, the second their season goes south, it's time to move these guys. Because, like, their idea was, oh, we have this new arena, we're going to try to make the playoffs, blah, blah, blah. But if you're, like, you know, 10 and 25, you're not making the playoffs. So at that point, it's really time. You know, you're not keeping Gay. You have to trade him before you lose him for nothing. Boogie is only signed through 2017-18, so the earlier you trade him, the more you're going to get. So it's really, I mean, it's now or never. If they're not going to trade him now, they're not going to get much for him next year, because he can be a free agent after that. So keep an eye out. Sorry, Sacramento fans, for bringing that up, but it's just the reality that, you know, your organization has been a tire fire for 7 years and has wasted all of DeMarcus Cousins so far. Let's touch briefly. You know, we make a concerted effort here not to talk about the Warriors, the Cavs, and the Clippers every time. There's only so much to say aside from, hey, they're really good. But we do want to give... We want to give some brief shout-outs to teams right outside of that, you know, top-tier championship elite that actually are playing really well. Notably, Charlotte, Atlanta, Houston, and Toronto. So, Sarah, I want to throw this to you first. Have any of those teams impressed you more than you expected this year?
Well, yeah, I'm glad actually to have the opportunity to say that right now, because I was pretty skeptical about Charlotte. I was worried mm-hmm. about their ability to score. I don't remember where I had them. I think maybe seventh or pretty far down in the East. And they look really good right now. Their defensive rating is fifth in the league, so I definitely didn't anticipate how good they would be on that end, which was a mistake. And I do remember them the few times that I got to see them last year defending really well. That makes a big difference. And their 11th offensive rating, which is pretty good, actually. It's certainly not terrible. They're just making it happen. Batum is a guy that I've always liked, but like even watching him in the summers with the French team, you feel like you always kind of want him to do just a little bit more.
Yeah.
But at this point, he kind of is what he is. And what he is a pretty darn good glue guy. I mean, he does, yes. You know, he's going to get you points, assists, rebounds, a little bit of everything. Kemba Walker's playing really, really well.
Yeah.
Kid Gilchrist, he looks pretty good. So, I mean, I was low on them, and I was wrong so far. I think they're definitely going to have a pretty good year if they just keep going like they're going. So, my bad, Charlotte.
Hey, mine too, Sarah. Mine too. Yeah. I wasn't really optimistic about them. To be fair, I didn't really expect Kemba Walker to come out and have a PER of 29.
Right.
And a true shooting percentage of 63.6. Brian, damn. Oh. I mean, come on. What the hell happened?
I picked him in the third round of my Works Fantasy League. So, as someone who had faith in Kemba, I am very happy. But I also picked Pau Gasol in like the fifth or the sixth round in that league. So, you win some, you lose some.
Yeah. No, I mean, Kemba is an MVP candidate right now.
Yeah.
There's no two ways about it. He's averaging almost 26 points a night and doing it in under 33 minutes. He's draining almost 3.5 triples a night. I mean, I think he is one of those rare guys who, much like Jimmy Butler, actually after his fourth year, he just started to develop. Like, you kind of pegged him as a certain type, and then he just turned you around and said, nope, I'm not. I'm a lot better. Yeah. And if this is like the new permanent Kemba, mm-hmm. holy hell, then he's a superstar. Then Charlotte has a definitive superstar, which is a word we haven't associated with Charlotte in like forever.
Right. Yeah, I mean, Kemba played well last year. He set career highs last year, and we thought, oh, okay, cool. Can he do it again? Or was that an anomaly? And I think it was also Zach Lowe who tweeted this. You know, he was praising Kemba, and he was saying, like, when Charlotte signed him to that extension, they were betting more on his work ethic than his skill set. So, like Jimmy, you know, they saw a guy who was not going to get complacent and say, okay, I'm a 20-point, 6-assist guy. That's good. I'm going to just settle into that range for the next 10 years, make my money, and get out. Like, Kemba has continued to improve on the weaker parts of his game. Like, he was not an elite 3-point shooter when he came into the league, and now look at him. I mean, you know, like, it's really impressive what he's done, especially, you know, Sarah, you mentioned Batum. He's kind of struggled so far this year, and Roy Hibbert has been dealing with knee issues since basically opening night. You know, they lost a lot of depth off the bench in the summer, so that's, I think, why a lot of us were not necessarily low on Charlotte. Like, we all had them as a playoff team, but not as like a top 4 seed.
We were low.
We were not like Sixers or Nets low. We still had them as a playoff team, but just not in that true, like, could pose a threat to Cleveland range. But now, you know, now they're looking really well. I also just want to shout out Atlanta. Like, Dwight Howard, he's been out, I think, the last game or two. But he's totally transformed that team. They, you know, rebounding was always a huge issue with them, with the Horford, Millsap front court. And I think they're now like 9th or 10th in the league in terms of rebounding percentage. whereas they were in the bottom five during the Millsap-Horford era. So I'm hoping this thing with Dwight is not long-term and he can get back on the court soon. We will mention, in our crush segment, we will mention the guy later who is going to help hold the fort for Howard when he's gone. Houston, I think this is a perfect place, actually, to seg into a MVP race update. Because, guys, you made fun of me for James Harden as my MVP pick. Are we still laughing?
Yeah.
Oh, okay, good.
Yeah. Okay, look, I'm just being stubborn. I'm still laughing. Because I picked Kawhi.
Yeah.
Who's just flat out better. I don't care what you're going to say. He's just better. I'm still laughing. No, look. No one foresaw James coming in and averaging almost 13 assists. Like, come on. That was just... What did we project him as? Like, 30 and 9?
Yeah, something like that. To be fair, so Mike D'Antoni spoke to Bleacher Report's Kevin Ding before the season started. And he said, you know, I hope James can double his number of assists from last year. And he averaged 7.5 last year. So then Ding went back to Harden and told him that. He was like, what? Are you serious? Get out of here. But, you know, look at him. Like, he had, against the Lakers that first night, he had, like, 9 assists in the first quarter, right?
Yeah, yeah.
Like,
12 and 9.
Yeah. This point Harden thing is working out very well for Houston. So, I'm still pretty pleased. I mean, he might not win MVP, but he is playing at an MVP level. That said, you know, you guys both pick Kawhi. He is a rock. He is still a two-way... You know, you could argue the best young two-way player in the game. You know, LeBron James is not young anymore, which is why you could put Kawhi in that category.
He is the best two-way player in the game.
Ahead of LeBron?
Here's the thing.
Wow.
I think, but hear my argument, though.
Okay.
Because you can't just quantify it as being a two-way player. You have to look at the specific impacts. I think Kawhi is that good of a defender that the difference in offensive output is not as great as the difference there is defensively between him and LeBron. I think he is that much better a defender that is it's not even close in terms of where LeBron is. Even LeBron has those 2 minutes intensive things where he just looks like the best defensive player in the world.
Right.
And then he's sort of, you know, jogs a little bit back and then reserves his energy. But Kawhi looks like that for at least 20 minutes of every ball game.
Yeah.
He is Scottie Pippen level in terms of defense and probably even better. Now, Bulls fans, I said it. Come at me. And the fact that he's averaging 25 points and has learned how to get to the line, has a terrific three ball, then I think the offensive separator between him and LeBron have also been lessened. Where LeBron absolutely kills him is in terms of playmaking ability.
Mm-hmm.
And that's a fair argument. And LeBron is overall probably... He's probably more influential.
Mm-hmm.
But in terms of being a two-way guy, like that specific label, I'm actually going to put Kawhi above him. Just because... While I love LeBron's two-minute outputs, Kawhi does it for 20, and he does it so greatly, and he's become so smart. It's unbelievable. So, yeah.
Just a reminder, listeners, that Morton is a Bulls fan, so that may be tinted in some degree. But to be fair, he is not Sarah, who is the Spurs fan on the podcast. So fact it did not come from Sarah says something about how good Kawhi is. And again, Sarah wrote a piece for B-Ball Breakdown earlier this year about Kawhi not being a system player. I think, congrats, Sarah, that piece has been more than justified in the first couple weeks of this year. So, you know, Kawhi and Harden both in the MVP race. Other guys, Chris Paul's been playing out of his mind. Russell Westbrook's been putting up insane numbers. LeBron and KD are going to linger around there. So we said it coming into the year, this is going to be one of the... You know, it's not going to be the Stephen Curry MVP, unanimous MVP. This thing is over by December. Like, this is going to be a very good MVP race all year.
No love for Jimmy, though.
Jimmy Butler's in there, too, as is Dame.
Yeah. And,
hell, I'll even throw in Greek Freak, because he's putting up ridiculous numbers.
Yeah, he is.
So we're gonna touch on the Bucks in a future podcast. We have not forgotten about them. Don't worry, Bucks fans. Your time is coming. That said, we're gonna move now to our Where Amazing Happens segment. And let's face it, the most amazing thing that happened this week: the Spurs are retiring Tim Duncan's number. And the all surprises, they will be doing it on my birthday, actually, December 18th.
Wow.
I know. Two holidays in one day. So, Sarah, could you give us your best fake Tim Duncan speech from that event?
I think Quixam Ramirez on Twitter pretty much nailed it. I think he said, thank you all for coming. Playing basketball for the Spurs was fun. That's pretty much it. No, I'm thrilled because... Yeah, I get like a 10-ticket plan every year, partial season ticket, and it just so happens that I have a ticket to that game.
Fitting.
It just lucked
out.
That
is so fitting.
So, what are the chances, you know? But
that's awesome.
The last 2 years, I've been pretty happy, been lucky. I got Kobe's last game in San Antonio last year, got a good Golden State game. I'm just happy as can be.
Who are you going with?
I won't have. I'm going with my mom. So yeah, bonus will be we won't have to spend any money on gas. We can just float home on our tears. So <Yeah. can't> wait.
Because your mom has to record your reaction there at halftime. We need to see this. I mean, come on.
I think it's happening post game, right?
Yeah.
Is that what I read?
Is it post game? Oh, yeah. I thought it was a halftime thing. Okay.
No, they want you to watch the whole game. They're not letting people sneak out early. Smart. So, yeah, congrats to Spurs fans and Sarah for lucking into a ticket to that already. And congrats to Tim Duncan, a obviously well-deserved honor. The other big off-court story of the week is this Phil Jackson-LeBron James posse beef. So, Mort, do you want to explain what's happening? Or I could explain what's happening and then... We'll just go into it. So, Jackson spoke with ESPN's Jackie McMullen. I don't even know why he was talking about LeBron James, when he left Miami for Cleveland. But he was saying, you know, LeBron wanted to spend the night in Cleveland. And they don't do overnights. So now, Pat Riley comes in and says, you know, you're not going to stay there. And here is the quote. He says, "You can't hold up the whole team because you and your mom and your posse want to spend an extra night in Cleveland." So Maverick Carter, who runs LeBron's agency, obviously took offense to the term posse, because these are very successful men on their own right. And posse has some negative connotations to it. And then LeBron, said he lost respect for Phil Jackson after hearing that. And Carmelo Anthony actually also spoke out and kind of was just very confused about the remarks. So we don't need to dive into who was right, who was wrong. I think there's a pretty obvious answer there. But Morton, do you think this is going to have longer-term effects on the Knicks, particularly when it comes to acquiring players either in free agency next summer and the following years, so long as Phil Jackson is president of the team?
Possibly. Here's the thing. I just need to say this because I actually didn't know that posse was a negative word. You know, I live in little Denmark. I don't know these things. I just didn't. Uh-huh. So I'm so glad that the NBA can educate me in these matters. Really? No, that sounded like a joke, but I'm actually being sincere because I could have mentioned that. I could have used that word with no ill intent, obviously, but I could have said it accidentally and someone might have gotten frustrated or upset or whatever. So I'm glad to know that, okay, there's a word that we simply don't use anymore. Thank you for that. But yeah, of course, whenever there's racial tensions, I think that might be a strong word, but it seems like that's the case, unless I've mis-evaluated the entire situation, then obviously that's going to linger into decision-making. Mm-hmm. Would you want to be under Phil Jackson if he has some inclination of using words that are like that? Well, maybe. But maybe not. Maybe money talks.
Right.
I mean, it's not like he said a worse word, if you know what I mean.
Yes.
I mean, and to his thing, I don't think Jackson even understood that he said something wrong. Like, we have to look at intent sometimes, though.
Yeah.
And I don't think he meant ill will. He just said something because, like me, he was wildly undereducated on that matter and not that word.
Mm-hmm.
So, yeah.
Wow. Yeah, I think it's definitely not like a Donald Sterling situation. We should clarify that right now.
Right, right.
He is not like an overt racist. We don't know. We don't know whether he knew the connotation or not, or what he meant specifically by that. He could have just said, you know, LeBron even said something like, what did he say exactly? He said, it's the word posse and the characterization I take offense to. If he said LeBron and his agent, LeBron and his business partners, or LeBron and his friends, that's one thing. So it is just the term posse.
I would argue that the word posse in and of itself is not inherently negative. Mm-hmm. And that was the one thing, like LeBron said, if you go and read the definition of what the word posse is, it's not what I've built over my career. It's not what I stand for. It's not what my family stands for. I don't really know what he was getting at with that, because like the actual Merriam-Webster definitions are a large group, often with a common interest, a body of persons summoned by a sheriff to assist in preserving the public peace, usually in an emergency, a group of people temporarily organized to make a search as for a lost child, or the last one, entourage. And the last one, I think, is where the context comes in. Because while I don't think it's a negative word, and I understand the argument of coded language, I think in context it makes sense that Maverick Carter would be upset and that LeBron would be upset, because it was dismissive at best. It was the implication was that these guys are hangers-on, not guys that like have something to offer on their own. So that all makes sense. I don't know what Phil's intent was. I don't know if it'll affect the Knicks or not going forward. But I did retweet something last night from Scoop Jackson that I think is like 10 years old. It was posted by a buddy of mine, Jamal, who I think his handle is at Bulls Bears Shy, C-H-I, Chicago, that did mention that it's not the first time that Phil Jackson has said something kind of borderline condescending, or he's mentioned hip-hop community and thuggish clothing and things like that before, so that's where, you know, he kind of loses benefit of the doubt. But yeah, I understand why they were upset, but I also don't think that the word itself is that bad a word, so I don't worry too much about using it, Morton. I mean, it has had like slang connotations these days, but it's not in and of itself, it's not inherently a negative word.
Yeah, I think you nailed it, Sarah, about the hangers-on point, you know, because it's no secret, a lot of NBA guys, you know, they try to give back once they, you know, they make millions of dollars, and they try to give back to the people that they grew up with, some of whom are not as fortunate as they are. But LeBron, rather than doing that, you know, it's not like he just doled out millions of dollars to his friends and says, come hang out with me all the time. He empowered these guys, and now they all run a part of his business, but they, you know, it's not like he's running it and he's putting their name on it. Like, they're doing that. So there is that kind of connotation that they are kind of like leeching off of him rather than like complimenting him and like building a support structure around him. So I think I have a feeling that's kind of where the anger and all of that comes from. That said, I don't know that it's going to affect the Knicks in a huge way moving forward. I think, you know, probably that ends the speculation of will LeBron James ever join the Knicks. But frankly, that ended in 2010 anyway. And, you know, LeBron does have sway over some other players in the league. Like, he can get guys to come to Cleveland for below market contracts. But I don't think he's going to tell, you know, all of his friends in the NBA, don't play for Phil Jackson. He's a racist. I don't think it's going to go that far. So I wouldn't worry too much, but it is something to keep an eye on with Phil, moving forward. Because if this turns into a trend, you know, it's people of his generation grew up very differently from people in our generation. So their experience, just in terms of race, you know, when he grew up, the country was still segregated. And like our parents' generation too, like it's just a very different frame of mind. So, you know, once you get to be the age, like Phil Jackson's age, you're a little more stuck in your ways and you're kind of just used to your own perspective rather than continually evolving, especially on things like race, I'm sure. So even if he didn't mean to offend, there might just be that thing in the back of his mind, you know, that's doesn't yeah. mean to be racist, but it still kind of is.
But it is. Yeah.
Yeah.
And I do think that's a good point, that it's very much generational too, not even as far as the racial implications, although that is there, but like you said, I don't know why he was talking about LeBron in the first place. I've been trying to right. figure that out. But I do think it has to be unsettling for kind of the old brass, the old guard, guys like Phil and Pat Riley, that when young kids come up and sort of, you know, let's face it, LeBron does wield a lot of power, whether, you know, he means to or not. So that's probably unsettling for guys who have been around for a long time. And, you know, I don't think they like that. But I don't know. It's an interesting, I'm sure it's unnerving, especially if a guy comes in with not a lot of experience and is kind of telling you what to do. But, you know, they have reason to be there as well. So,
right. Yeah. Right. Yeah. The player empowerment thing is a good point. It'd be really interesting to see if, like, you know, if it's just a black superstar thing, or if like Doug McDermott turned into a LeBron James-esque superstar, would they have the one same can kind hope. Of problems? Yeah, one can hope, Bulls fans.
One can hope. Look, I would be really nervous if Phil had been the type of dude who had brought people into the locker room while players were showering and said, "Look at those beautiful black bodies." Right?
Yeah, right.
Then I would be genuinely worried, and I would probably start a protest all the way from Denmark.
Yeah.
But yeah, until we reach that point, hopefully we never do. Then,
right.
Yeah, I'm going to give Phil the benefit of the doubt here, but still, why was he talking about LeBron in the first place is a damn good question, Sarah. Because, and it's just so Phil, because Phil has a tendency to just talk and really say nothing. I mean, the books he's written, it's like the same book three times or whatever. It's like he just tells the same stories all over again.
Yeah. Well, speaking of racism, the other big story to come out this week was from ESPN's Zach Lowe and Mark Stein. At least three NBA teams, notably the Milwaukee Bucks, Memphis Grizzlies, and Dallas Mavericks, have stopped staying at Donald Trump-branded hotels this season, in part to avoid any implied association with the new president-elect. So they're moving away from Trump hotels in New York City and Chicago. They said another Eastern Conference team contracted to stay at the Trump Soho has already decided to switch when its current contract expires, and other teams are still currently scheduled to stay at Trump-branded properties. So, guys, do you think this is a good move for the NBA to distance themselves from the president-elect?
How could you even ask that, Brian, based on our conversation last time around? Yeah. Jesus.
Yeah.
No, of course. I mean, I was actually surprised when I learned that teams were staying at Trump-branded hotels. I thought they were staying at, like, the Four Seasons and whatever. I never thought, like, Trump hotels would be a thing for the NBA teams. But apparently it is. And good on the Bucks and Mavs and Grizzlies. And I hope every other team is going to follow their path, obviously.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I mean, you know, part of it, I don't want to say it's a matter of, like, safety for them, but, you know, in a lot of cities, including New York and Chicago, there have been protests at the Trump hotels. I would assume they're still going on. I mean, in Chicago, at least, they went on the first 5 or 6 days after the election, and, like, Saturday was, like, an all-day affair. So, in part, it could just be, like, wanting to avoid creating even more of a headache. But, yeah, I mean, based on, you know, we talked about it last time, based on a lot of the views that he espoused throughout the campaign and continues to espouse based on his appointments and rumored appointments or people that are on his transition team. I don't know. It's not even like a minority thing. I just don't know, no matter who you are, what race you are, what religion, what gender, what sexuality you are, you can't support this man and you can't give more money to him. So we talked about it on last episode, and if you want more thoughts on the NBA's take on the election, check that out. But I just really admire the NBA for being a place where teams and players can express their views so openly. And we compared it last time to the NFL, where, you know, guys are biting their tongue. Like, the Indianapolis Colts head coach this week just said, like, I'm not speaking on it because I'd probably get fired in 5 minutes. So I'm glad the NBA is being more open and letting their players speak on these issues, because, you know, we saw it earlier this year with Carmelo and LeBron and Chris Paul and Dwayne Wade when they got on stage in the ESPYs and said, like, this, we have a public social responsibility to use our power to do good and to facilitate more understanding between, like, the African-American community and policemen. You know, things are only based on the rhetoric that's been used in the past, you know, the election, and now since, you know, there have been hundreds of hate crimes across the U.S. since the election last week. Things may only get worse. So I'm, you know, the NBA, I think they, all of us would give a round of applause to the NBA for letting their players wield their power as they should and realize that they have a place that is bigger than basketball, which is like a noted change from the Michael Jordan era. That said, we are now going to move into our My Crush segment, where we shine a spotlight on an under-the-radar player. So we already did Julius Randle, so let's avoid Mr. Randle for our crushes. Sarah, I'm going to start with you. Who is your crush for the week?
I'll just go back. We should probably mention, I did see Coach Fizdale said that the Grizzlies weren't trying to make any kind of statement, that they booked their hotels in advance, and I don't know, whatever. But on the other hand, Jabari Parker from the Bucks did make a statement that they absolutely were avoiding Trump hotels on purpose. So
that's awesome. Yeah,
mine is a cop out because just like I know you said last week you didn't get to watch a lot of basketball. This week, yes. The last 2 weeks, I've really kind of been out of it, but I'm coming back, guys. I'm gonna get up off the mat.
Yeah.
So it's kind of a cop out, cause, and I'm on a high from that game that I watched last night. Grizzlies Clippers are back, and that was a lot of fun.
Yes.
And I was thinking about, you know, that kind of weird conversation in NBA circles earlier this year that about, is Damian Lillard underrated? And we're like, no, he's not. Everyone knows how good he is. You know what I will say, though? Mike Conley is still probably more underrated than he should be. Now, obviously, he's getting paid lots of money, so obviously his team values him. But talk about a guy who's had the same, if you want to call him, slights that Damian's had. You know, he's not a Team USA guy either. He's not a perennial All-Star. But he is a fantastic player. Last night, he had 30 points, was 7 of 9 from 3, 8 assists, 3 steals, 5 rebounds, and is leading the Grizzlies back.
Yes.
And, you know, back into the conversation where we thought they probably should be in our season predictions. So that was a huge win for them, knocking off the team that's looked like the best team so far. So I just wanted to give Mike Conley a little love.
I like it. That's, you know, we do try to avoid the bigger name players, but I think you have a fair point in that, you know, Mike Conley has the biggest contract in basketball history right now, but he's still not mentioned among those, like, top-tier elite point guards. But he is. He absolutely is. And he's, under Fizdale, he's really hitting his stride, which is what, you know, we mentioned that on the division preview as well. We kind of expected Fizdale to let them run a little bit more than they have in years past, and it seems like that is coming to fruition a little bit. So good on you, Mike Conley. We're glad to see you earning your $30 million a year. Mort, how about you? Who's your crush for the week?
Well, I don't have a player. Oh, I have a skill.
Oh, fun.
My crush is Andre Drummond's free throw shooting.
Oh,
yeah, I like it.
Yeah. So last year, Drummond had 8 games in which he shot over 60% from the foul line. Mm-hmm. This year, he's played 11, and in 5 games, it's gone over 60.
Interesting.
And that includes 2 games where he's been perfect, compared to last year where he only had 1, and that was on 1 attempt. So this year, he's had 2 games where he shot 3 for 3, and 1 that was 2 for 2. I like the fact that he's shooting over 50, I think it's 53.9% or 52, something like that. Mm-hmm. The fact that he's 52.9%. It's not great by any measure, but considering he shot 35.5% from the foul line last year, it's something that I am overwhelmingly positive towards. I love it. I hope that he continues this improvement, and I believe he thanks it all to virtual reality, which is awesome. Mm-hmm. You know, technology is terrific and wonderful. So my crush is Andre Drummond's free throw shooting, because if he unlocks that skill, that means Stan Van Gundy can keep him in at the end of ball games, which is huge. And that would have Drummond experience these late game situations on a more steady, I'm losing a word here, but you know, more routinely.
Yeah.
He would be in at the end of games, and that would just give him so much more to for the playoffs, and it would ready him a lot more.
Yeah.
So, yeah, that's my crush this summer.
Yeah, that's a really good pick. You know, we mentioned a couple weeks ago, you know, how that the fact that Van Gundy couldn't play him at the end of games or chose not to until his free throw shooting improved was one of the biggest drawbacks about him and what was holding him back. So it is really good to see him. You know, you said it, 53% is not great by any means, but that's a huge upgrade over 35. You know, that's more in like Dwight Howard territory or Shaq territory. And if he's so dominant that in every other facet of the game, you know, even if he's shooting 53%, that it becomes like a plus EV play to keep him in games. Because if you're doing the hack of Drummond, and he's hitting 1 out of every 2 at the line, you know, you're averaging at least a point per possession. And now it's suddenly worthwhile keeping him in and letting people hack him as long as he's making them pay for it with a little more regularity. So good pick, Mort. As promised, I said in the Atlanta part earlier that I would bring up the guy who is going to help replace Dwight Howard for as long as he is out. That is Mike Muscala, who through 11 games, he's playing 21.6 minutes, averaging 9.9 points on 63.8% shooting, 4.6 rebounds, 1.8 assists, 0.7 blocks, shooting almost 37% from three-point range as well. So against Milwaukee on Wednesday, he started in Howard's place, had 16 points, 5 rebounds, 3 assists, and a block in 33 minutes. Dude just playing out of his mind. I mean, I don't think any of us had Mike Muscala on our radar coming into the year as a difference maker. That, you know, there was some concern about Atlanta in the wake of losing Horford to Boston and trading him out with Dwight Howard, but Muscala's play off of the bench, and now, you know, now that he's in the starting lineup temporarily, it's really helping Atlanta stay afloat. So, I mean, their last 3 wins came against Philly, Miami, and Milwaukee, which is not exactly, you know, a murderer's row of opponents. But before that, they beat Cleveland and Chicago. They were prior to Cleveland's loss against Indiana on Wednesday night, which came without LeBron James. They were the only team to beat Cleveland. So Atlanta's frisky this year, guys. I mean, we said and we continue to say that it's, you know, it still looks like a Golden State Cleveland Finals is, you know, if you had to put money down, you would put money down on that. But it is not a shoe-in by any means. There are teams in both conferences now that could at least put a little bit of a scare into Cleveland, and Atlanta is one of those teams in the East. So, way to go, Mike Muscala. Yep. Keep it up. Hope, you know, I don't know if you're going to shoot 64% for the rest of the year, but even if you keep at it, you know, even you keep some level of contribution up off the bench, you're going to be a valuable asset for the Hawks.
And so think, like, if they offered him an extension, they could have gotten him so cheap.
Oh, for sure.
Yeah. He's going to cost like $15 million a year next summer.
Oh, yeah. Well, he was a second-round pick, though, so they couldn't offer him an extension, right?
Couldn't they?
I think.
His fourth year?
Yeah,
Given that they have 4 years on him, they should have had, like, full bird rights on him, right? So yeah. He should have gone into unrestricted free agency?
But I think you can only offer an extension for first-round picks, I believe.
Oh, okay.
Right, there y'all go, speaking a different language again.
Yeah, and apparently not a correct one, because I just messed that one up, so that's beautiful. Yeah. Okay.
But your point stands in that he is going to make a truckload of money next year in free agency if he keeps this up.
Mm-hmm.
So, that is going to do it for this episode of the NBA Podcast. Again, be sure to check us out on Twitter at the NBA Pod. You'll find all three of our Twitter handles in there as well. Give us a follow, please. Check us out on iTunes. Download, subscribe, leave some reviews, and then check out FanRag Sports on Twitter at FanRag Sports. Until then, I'm Brian Toporek, and always joined by Morten Jensen and Sarah Chalea. Have a good one, guys.
Take care.
Likewise, Brian.